Good morning. This is Toni Julian, and I am your host of Toni Talks Humanity Matters. And I am thrilled to have a special guest, Tom King, who is the CEO of Icon Foods, based in beautiful Portland, Oregon. And his company is one of the largest importers and manufacturers and distributors of natural sweeteners, of which I am a huge fan. He is also a self-professed serial entrepreneur, and other parts of his persona include personal development wonk. I want to hear more about that. And biohacker info geek, which I think we have that in common as well. Yeah. He's made food science his passion to be able to help people eat healthier and avoid harmful sugars. So critical. Tom is also the author of Guy Gone Keto, How to Lose Weight, Feel Great, and Achieve Long-Time Fitness. And one thing that Tom may not mention is that he is also a really good person, which is that I think is most important, Tom. So Tom, thank you. Welcome for, and thank you for joining me.
Thank you, Toni. I appreciate that. That was a pretty amazing introduction. I hope I can live up to it.
I think you'll live beyond it. So
Thank you.
So I know our listeners will be really interested to hear your thoughts on the work that you've done that, you know, for the bigger picture beyond products, beyond everything is the work that you're doing to impact people's health. And I was so excited, Tom, to have you on this program because we share that same philosophy. We've dedicated our lives to it. So especially as it pertains to sugar, blood sugar regulation, and keeping people healthy and away from disease. So I'm hoping you don't mind if we kind of start at the beginning and we can kind of unfold some chapters, which is your personal journey and, should I say, confession. Into how you got here.
Yeah, confession is probably the best way to sort of describe my book. You know, I felt like I needed to own some things. So, you know, I mean, we go way back. So, I mean, you were, you know, familiar with my business when, you know, our retail was just starting up, and that was Steviva Brands. So, I mean, this has been a pretty major journey for me. And, you know, so I guess the journey really started, you know, before I started, Steviva Brands. It started, you know, in Phoenix, Arizona, when I ran into a gentleman whose name was Jim May. And I would say he's the OG of Stevia. Like he literally came from Paraguay and had a jar of this green paste. And he's like, "Hey, you should try this." And I'm like, "Well, okay, let's see what happens." And I tried it, and it was probably 25 times sweeter than sugar. Had a lot of like licorice-y, herbal, you know, after notes or off notes. And, you know, but the second I tried it, I thought, you know, there's something here. Like this could be sort of a natural, you know, replacement for aspartame. So like NutraSweet was just, you know, being pushed through the FDA at the time. And, you know, I thought this would be a great sort of natural replacement for that if it got passed by the FDA, which it did. And then while they did that, they also put a hold on approving Stevia as a sweetener that took almost a decade and a half to reverse. But that's how I got into it. And you know, when I first ran into that stevia plant, I was like, there has to be a way to be able to extract those sweet constituents out of the leaves in sort of a natural way, you know, like using like hot water and maybe, you know, vegetable alcohol. So it took me about 3 or 4 years working with different chemists and different companies to be able to find a company that would, you know, that would be able to co-manufacture that for me. And so I'd say in 2019, now, 1999 is when things really started to come together. And that's when, you know, we took our first shipment of our water extracted stevia extract and, you know, and started the brand. And that was the beginning of it, of the sweetener. But the journey, that's just the beginning of it. Because at the time, Atkins was a big deal. So yeah, Atkins was like, I would say Atkins was the precursor for keto. And so I used to use Atkins, but I would use Atkins in a way that as a diet. So I would gain some weight. I would do Atkins. I'd gain some weight. I would do Atkins. But what happened is I kept getting fatter. Like I would lose some weight, but then the weight would come back and I'd start getting fatter. So it really wasn't until I wrote the book about 3 years ago or started the book 3 years ago. It wasn't until then that I guess you could say that I bottomed out, you know, that I hit the wall. Cause I was in Vegas and I had a dinner with one of our vendors and they were buying and I had a steak and I had a potato and I had cake and I had wine and I got up back up to my room, at the Luxor, which was, I don't know how to describe it except like it smelled like, broken dreams and shame. And it was perfect though. Yeah. It was perfect timing because I was like, you know what? I looked in the mirror and it's like, I was carrying about 35 pounds of extra weight. My blood pressure was through the roof. You know, I had terrible heartburn, you know, so I was taking Prilosec for it. And it's like, you know, this is BS because I'm working, you know, in the health food industry, working with companies that, you know, produce food for, you know, for keto and low carb. And I'm not following it. Like I am like living to eat, not eating to live. And at that point, I think the pain of my lifestyle and who I was at the time, the pain of that exceeded the pleasure that I was deriving from pizza and beer and, you know, in a crappy lifestyle. And at that point, I just said no more. And I started journaling. So I was just journaling everything, you know, that was in my head, like, how am I going to shift my lifestyle? How am I going to make this not a diet, but commit to a lifestyle change? And that gave birth to the book. And that's, there you go. That was sort of a circuitous way to get to how I got here. But, and now I'm here.
Yeah, that's a wonderful story. And I think so many people can relate because that shame that you talk about, so many people feel that, like if we are, like you ignored all kinds of signals to your body, right? Mm-hmm. You ignored not feeling great. You ignored right. lack of energy. You ignored the excess weight. And maybe, I don't know if your blood pressure was up or what your labs mm-hmm. looked like, but like we have all these signs that tell us. And then I think the part that is sad for people, and you talked about this in your book, Guy Gone Keto, mm-hmm. which is, and a lot of women are in this as well, is that mm-hmm. The amount of shame that we feel and the mm-hmm. self-esteem that just spirals mm-hmm. down because of this. And we know, and I'm also very spiritual, so like we know mm-hmm. when we're not living to our full potential. Like mm-hmm. we know that, and that to me is a sin. That to me is a shame. And we all have different degrees of that, right?
Yeah. I mean, shame is, I think for me, shame is probably one of the most painful emotions that a person can experience.
Yeah.
You know, I look at social media and online and in, you know, it supposed to look like, and also for men too. I mean, it's not as extreme for men, but for women, most definitely, you know, if you don't fit a certain type, you know, then you're not desirable. And so what happens is people get into a shame cycle and, you know, and breaking out of that shame cycle is a chore. It takes work, but it takes, it can commit to yourself. Like I'm going to break the cycle of shame, you know, and this is how I'm going to do it. And I mean, for me, I've carried shame for my entire life. And shame is still something that, you know, that I struggle with, but it, you know, but now I've learned to sort of harness it into, you know, correcting my path. So I'm learning, and I think that I will probably be learning until the day I die to harness shame, to control shame, to take my right path.
Yeah. And you talked about journaling, which I think is such a great thing to do because it's not just a self-reflection, but how wonderful to look back, you know, where you were, Tom, maybe 3-5 years ago or 15 years ago and just say, wow, look how far I've come. And I was reading that people who journal their foods and their feelings and all that, they are like 70% more likely to be successful trying to make those, you know, those sustainable lifestyle changes that you're talking about, which is so great. It just makes people more aware, you know, more aware, more conscious. And I'm with you when it comes to the shame thing. If I, if I don't do things just like spot on, I'll be like, oh, why did I have that wine last night? Why did I do that? You know? And I think that's just so common, but I think the feeling is that self-check, but falling short of the shame. There are other ways to motivate ourselves, right?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, when shame turns to suffering, I believe that that's when, you know, when you've lost sort of control over it. Like, you know, when you put yourself in a suffering state because you're immersed in shame. But like the journaling for me, the journaling is something I do every single day. Like I don't miss journaling. Like there's some things that, you know, that I try to do every day. You know, like I try to work out every single day. There might be a day that I get up late or I've got, you know, something going on. But I, you know, I do try to get some sort of physical activity every single day, but there's bright lines, bright red lines around journaling. Like that is one thing that it doesn't matter where I am or what I'm doing. It's like the first thing when I get up in the morning, coffee, journal. And I've really found that it's helped me, you know, so much because I've incorporated other things within my journaling. Like one of my favorite books that I read every single day by Ryan Holiday, it's called The Daily Stoic. And when I was younger, I used to practice Buddhism, and I really feel like Stoicism was that next step up. So every day I read, you know, a passage from The Daily Stoic, and then I picked up a habit last year, which has really been so amazing for me. Like I was listening to a podcast on Joe Rogan's show, and he was interviewing Tommy Chong, and Tommy Chong, you know, from Cheech and Chong, like,
I'm oh,
like,
well, him.
It's like, he's a pothead. And like, what does he know? A big pothead. And I listened to him and he's like 82 or something. And he was super transparent about, you know, where he was in his life, you know, and that he had to go to jail, you know, some of the health issues that he was having. But, you know, the one thing that I picked up, the one grain that was a big treasure for me was he started talking about the I Ching. And he's like, I do the I Ching every single day. And it's like the key to, you know, I would say that it's the key to Chinese mysticism. And so I'm like, you know what? The I Ching does sound super interesting. So I started doing the I Ching like about a year and a half ago after that podcast. And now I sort of incorporate it into my journaling process. It's like, so what are the questions? You know, for me, the journaling really starts with questions. And so the I Ching really brings that out. So on Sunday, I used to have this little ceremony of like busting out the I Ching and then, you know, journaling about what, you know, what my lesson is. Like, is my lesson to, you know, to simplify, you know, simplify my life? Is my, you know, is my lesson this or that? And I mean, there's always really, really beautiful lessons in it. And I would say for anybody looking to get into journaling, if they haven't journaled before, and I run into this all the time, people are like, I can't journal. I got a piece of paper in front of me and I can't think of anything to put down. I'm like, oh, well, ask yourself a question. And they're like, well, what do you mean? And it's like, well, ask yourself the question, what am I grateful for today? You know, and that will take you down a path. And, you know, I mean, it's been said that, you know, that negativity and gratitude can't exist, you know, at the same time.
That's right.
So if you're feeling a little negative, you throw some gratitude on it, you know, sprinkle a little gratitude on it and just asking yourself, you know, what is it that I'm grateful for? You know, what is it that I want to manifest in my life? You know, what is it that, you know, where could I have shown restraint? What can I do to be better? I mean, just if you ask yourself the questions, you will find that the ink flows from the pen magically upon that paper.
Yes, it does. And then also, if you are in tune, you will also receive answers. I do constantly. And one time I just kind of asked, what is wrong? Like, why am I just not, like, what's going on? And then I heard, it's your attitude. Like, yeah.
That's
you know,
so funny.
The universe will respond. It was my attitude. I had to get a better attitude. And, you know, we all kind of fall into that every now and then. But don't you think that what you eat, like, yes, gratitude, like I say gratitude, I send energy, I do all these things, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. And have similar rituals. But don't you find that, like, when you eat crap, whether it's, you know, alcohol, sugar, mm-hmm. things that aren't healthy for you, doesn't mm-hmm. that, like, put you in that like negative, not feeling good state? Like, don't you feel like that? I mean, it's a very leading question, obviously, but I don't you feel like that undermines that gratitude in some degree?
Yeah, I do. I think it poisons your body. And if it poisons your body, it poisons your mind. So, you know, look, I don't eat well 100% of the time. I mean, that is a fact. I try to eat well 90% of the time. The other 10% of the time, I drink beer. I'll have whiskey. I've even been known to have fast food.
Yeah. Oh, so you enjoy your life?
I do. I enjoy my life. But then after, you know, like when you put something crappy into your body, you know, you feel like, you know, this isn't how I should be treating my temple. You know, you get one body to get you around, right? And your body is carrying yourself around, your spirit, your sentient being, if you will. That's your vehicle. And it's like, that's you want right. to be driving around in a broken down Dodge pickup with a flat tire? No, it's like treat your temple like, you know, a really nice Mercedes or something, you know, just like treat it like it needs to be treated. You have this beautiful body. That's a miracle. Like, it's a miracle that your heart is beating. Like, people don't ask, how is that happening? Why is my heart beating? And, you know, why do I feel the way that I feel? It's like, you can become so immersed into the absolute beauty and miracle and splendor of what our human body is. So why would you put a bunch of garbage in the front seat of your car?
Like, right.
Don't do it.
Exactly. And I always kind of make this joke that people spend more time figuring out how their printers should work than learning about how they should work themselves. Right.
That's so true.
It's just such a simple thing. So you've come a long way, Tom, because one of the things that I was just like really laughing about is you, if you would share this, you used to think that, you know, sugar gave you energy and fat made you fat. And then you had this concoction when you were a teenager, was it? When you were pretty young.
I know where you're going.
You had me in stitches on that one. I was like, yeah. Oh,
I get that a lot. And it's interesting because, yeah, so when I grew up, right? So like, I'm a child of the 70s. And when I was in school, right? I mean, when I was in school, they had songs about fat, like, you know, and like, don't be fat, don't eat fat on chicken. And just like, in some of my classes, they would have these, you know, these things about not eating fat. And so sugar was always one of those things that's like, oh yeah, have some sugar. It's going to give you energy. And it's, you know, and this was something that was perpetuated by scientists that were paid by the sugar industry back in the 60s and 70s. So, you know, my parents, teachers, everybody that, you know, that influenced me at the time was all about sugar. You know, put a little sugar on it. If you got cereal that's already loaded with sugar, put some milk on it. Here's some more sugar. Here's some bananas, you know. And so, I mean, that's what my brain was fed with. It's like, this is what gets you by. So when I was in school, when I was in college, I had an unusual job. It was serving legal papers on people and repoing cars at night. So I was all about having a little bit of extra energy. And so the thing that I would love to do is to take a can of Coke or Pepsi, drink a little bit out, and then empty a pack of M&Ms into it. And that was sort of my, I don't know what you would call that, but I would call it like probably cocaine, because it was like, it was so toxic. It would give me a buzz for probably a solid hour, followed by not even knowing where I was or who I was. It's like, yeah, but it was delicious at the time. Like, now when I think about it, it just makes me want to gag. But yeah, I would drink that Pepsi, and down at the bottom would just be this sweet, sort of syrupy, sugary goo. And that would put me on a pretty bad cycle.
Yeah, I can only imagine. And it's just, I kind of goes back to the things that we think were true. And then what I love about science, though, and the things that you're into is that scientists get to learn more and then adjust their position based on what's new. And it, I think as consumers, if I think about my client base and a lot of the people that I know and the listeners here, is that it's so confusing. So like something that's good now wasn't good then, but sugar, clearly we know. I mean, that there's no confusion around that.
Yeah. I mean, sugar is an interesting thing, you know, like, cause I get interviewed a lot and people are like, oh, well, do you think that food manufacturers put sugar in the food to, you know, for mind control or because they know that it's going to make us addicted? But I mean, I work in the food industry, and so I know so many people in the food industry, and I can absolutely, without a shadow of a doubt, say no. Food manufacturers don't put sugar in your food to make it more addicting. Food manufacturers put sugar in your food because it's cheap, you know, because it's a subsidized industry. And so they can take a product or a compound or an ingredient, sugar, that's 15 cents a pound, right? So let's take ketchup, for example. Like if you've got ketchup has more sugar in it than ice cream.
Yeah. Isn't that crazy?
That is super nuts. And then somebody's like, well, I'm going to have a hamburger and, you know, but I'm going to put ice cream all over the top of it. And that's no different than somebody putting ketchup on top of it. But when you look at ketchup, like when I first started formulating ketchups, I was looking at ketchup and I'm like, what the hell? Why are they doing this? And the number one ingredient was sugar, followed by tomatoes. And I started thinking about it and it's like, wow, well, if you look at the old recipes that they used to use for ketchup, the number one ingredient was like tomato paste or crushed tomatoes, but that's expensive. Like you could pay up to like $1.50 a pound, right? But if you can take and cut that expense, right? $1.50 a pound, but you're using now half as much, but instead you're just using sugar and salt to replace those tomatoes. Now a bottle of ketchup that used to cost you maybe $2 now costs you like 75 cents. So that is the reason that food companies use sugar in their products, because it's cheap. It's a super cheap filler. The solution would be to stop subsidizing that industry.
That's interesting. I was actually not aware of that.
Yeah. I mean, a lot of people aren't. I mean, there's certain industries that are subsidized, like the corn industry is subsidized. So when people are like, well, why is there everything has corn in it? And it's like, well, because, you know, corn is a subsidized crop, and there's like two or three corporations that control 90% of the world's entire crop of corn. And so when you look at that, they've got a lot of influence with the government. And, you know, and we all, I'm sure if you are aware of anything, you're probably aware of all the money that goes into politics, right?
Oh yeah.
And so it's like, that's how our democracy is run, unfortunately. But when you look at like the power that the corn industry and the sugar industry and the cotton industry, all of these corporate run industries, when you look at the power that they have over our politicians, you know, with being able to make donations and, you know, and super PACs and, you know, all of this, it's like there has to be an end to the cycle. And one thing that I can say is that cycle is not going to end through our government. That cycle is going to end through consumers making decisions to start eating stuff that's whole foods, right? Eat stuff that doesn't have sugar in it. Eat stuff that doesn't have corn syrup in it. You know, eat fresh food. Make your own food. Shop the outside aisles at the store where the fresh produce are, and the fresh, you know, fresh meat and dairy. You shop those outside. Stay out of the inside where the canned food and the packaged food is. But the consumer, it's like we have the power to be able to make a difference. And that power is made through our pocketbook.
It is. We can vote at the cash register. And that's one of my favorite thoughts is like, well, then let's not buy it. And you know, if you think about like what I share with clients is, you know, go to farmers markets, right? Mm-hmm. And some people can't afford that. And I recognize there is also a financial impact as far as individuals making those choices and trying to feed their families. Well, I can go to this fast food place for $2 and feed each kid. Yeah, but like the damage that's being done. And I know it's like education and making our own choices. And that goes for everything, but we need to take control back. You know, you talk about, you know, in your book and some of the other things I've read, diabetes and obesity, and that epidemic. And yeah, can you talk a little bit about that and like what can people do to get the sugars out of their diet in a way that is sustainable to them? What would you recommend?
Well, so I would still recommend shopping the outside aisles of the grocery store. So here's the thing. It's like, I totally understand people that, you know, particularly now, the people that, you know, have had, you know, their means restricted, like they're unable to work or, you know, because of the virus or of a variety of other reasons. Right. But I mean, when you brought up the fact that, hey, you could feed a kid for $2 by going to, you know, a fast food restaurant, I would challenge that. And I would say, yeah, you have 4 kids. And you just spent $4 for each kid. Okay. That's $8. For $8, you can buy yourself a head of broccoli and you can buy yourself whole chicken. Right. And
yeah, so absolutely.
When you buy yourself a whole chicken, you know, you could buy yourself a whole chicken. You can go to Safeway, you can go to any of these conventional markets. Right. If you're in a situation where you can't afford to go to like a Whole Foods or something like that, but if you can go to even just go to like a Safeway or conventional store, you know, and buy yourself a chicken somewhere between the $4 to $6 range for a chicken, and you cook that chicken, that's going to feed a family of 6. I mean, you're going to be able to feed your entire family for that. And with the broccoli, I mean, now you have a perfect meal, right? Mm-hmm. And so when you're done with the chicken, save the bones, right? And boil those down into bone broth. And now you have soup and you can add more cut up vegetables to it. And now you've extended that chicken out to be able to feed your family for a couple of days. And so that $8 just turned into two days of meals and, you know, and it's healthy and you're not going to, you know, you're not going to go down the path of diabetes, which is obesity and diabetes. Right. And so most of the people, like when you look at the biggest metabolic impact that we are dealing with now, it's type 2 diabetes. And type 2 diabetes is self-inflicted, right? I mean, you give that to yourself by eating crap, you know, by eating high glycemic carbohydrates and sugar and, you know, and a sedentary lifestyle. And it's like, don't let yourself go down that path, okay? Because that is not the path of strength, it's the path of weakness. Right. And that's how you can be controlled too. Like if you are suffering from health, you're under the guidance of physicians and pharmaceutical companies, because now you're taking pharmaceuticals, you know, to combat your blood sugar levels. And it's like, take control of your life, go buy a chicken, don't buy the McNuggets.
Exactly. And you bring up just some wonderful tips for people. And even as I was thinking, boy, it's just so easy to make soup, even with the celery tops or, you know, parts that you might use in a salad, but may not like use the entire thing. Like it just makes such a great, you know, and then you're also capturing all those nutrients from all of that in a stock. Right. And then bone broth is so important because it helps your microbiome. Mm-hmm. Like so many good things around that, aside from the financial savings. Yeah. I love that.